February 4th meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and as always, we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, Naomi.
Mayor Pruitt.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw.
Here.
Councilmember Bond.
Here.
Councilmember Todd.
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Here.
Councilmember Steckler.
Here.
Councilmember Fignell.
Here. Okay, items of communication. Anybody want to talk to the council? Going once, twice?
There's a sign-up sheet.
Oh, okay. Naomi, can I have the sign-up sheet, please?
Members, I look forward to getting to know you better. The reason for my stopping by was just to bring the greetings of the fire district to you. We know that the city's been busy, the district's been busy, and we haven't been a regular presence here like we had historically. So the main purpose for my wanting to speak to you for a few minutes was to give you a couple of very, very quick updates. You may have read or knew that both Chief Meek and Chief Andrews retired in January. That's 88 years of experience leaving the picture. We found excellent replacements for them. Chief O'Brien was the former chief up at Lake Stephens, who will be replacing Gary, and we'll make sure we get him down here and introduce him to you and give you the opportunity to get to know him, ask questions, and that kind of thing. You're probably aware as well that last year was busy for the fire district with our merger with Lake Stephens, and like all of those things, that integration now will be carried out over the next couple of years. And to make one of the discussions we had at the commissioner level was that we need to be making sure that as the fire district is growing, we're staying in close communications with the cities that we serve. So a decision has been made for the commissioners we have, and we'll finally settle on seven of us permanently, are going to kind of divide up, and we're going to give you some primary commissioners to work with the city. Lake Stephens will have the same relationship with a few of our commissioners as will Monroe. So for you lucky people, you end up with myself, Commissioner Waugh, who's the chairman of the board, and Troy Elmore, who's coming over from Lake Stephens. So we'll be kind of your contact points with the fire district so you don't get confused trying to sort through nine of us right now. And we want you to feel free to contact us. We'll be taking turns or ganging up on you and showing up in mass at some meetings. And we look forward to getting back into a regular reporting and accountability relationship with you as we serve the city. So, yeah, thank you, and we'll keep you posted as this thing develops and rolls out.
Thank you. Hey, thank you for coming. Okay, Will Nelson.
Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive, Southeast in Mill Creek. Call your attention to the packet we got tonight about the Mill Creek Boulevard Study Draft Vision Statement. In the third sentence, it talks about the buildings in the sub-area being of similar design and scale to the existing town center. The question I have there, does that mean that there's going to be a lot of high-density apartments proposed for this area? I wouldn't think that that would be a good vision coming into town on 164th to see a bunch of high-density apartments. Nor if you're coming in from the south to see high-density apartments. And personally, I didn't know about workforce housing until I heard it in this community. But in my work in the nuclear industry, I found out that I could get more sleep at night if I lived in a blue-collar apartment complex, so to speak. So if
force,
that would probably be a better thing for people trying to get a good night's sleep as opposed to white collar. White collar people tend to sleep with the room around a lot at night and make a lot of noise. In the fourth sentence, they talk about modifications to public streets, and in the third bullet below that, they talk about the same thing. Just remind everybody that Mill Creek Boulevard funnels a lot of traffic off of 164th. Anything you do to Mill Creek Boulevard could well back up traffic under 164th during evening commute times, which I don't think would be a very good thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Carmen?
Carmen Fisher, 14623 Main Street, apartment B101, Mill Creek. So last week, I really appreciated that we're getting started on the hiring process for the police officer. Obviously, I thought that Deputy Chief Scott Eastman did a great job presenting. And I thought that you had a really sound discussion on a lot of the ins and outs, except for on one point, which was when a couple of you mentioned as an enticement what a great place to work Mill Creek is. And I think that that is an unrealistic assessment of what Mill Creek's reputation as a workplace is right now. I think that reputation is still tarnished from a fairly recent history of a lot of reports of toxicity and abuse. And particularly because I don't feel like after that any strong statement was made to the public about, as a matter of policy, we want Mill Creek to be as great a place to work as it is a place to live. I don't know what the tools or solutions are to that. You know, I know that the personnel committee was dissolved in 2016. I don't know if you've ever thought about revisiting that. You know, we talked about adding some other feedback mechanisms, but I think it's important to be realistic about what that view is and whether you want to make a different kind of statement about that. Thank you.
Thanks. Anybody else? Going once, twice? Okay, we'll have another opportunity at the end of the meeting. And now we're on to presentations, and we're going to receive another honorary check from County Councilman Terry Ryan. And this is for the design and construction of a new rectangular rapid flashing beacon and pedestrian crosswalk at Jackson High School along 136th Street in the vicinity of the sports fields. The project will install ADA ramps on both sides of the street. And of course, the Everett School District is in support. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to point out that although this project is in our transportation improvement plan, we hadn't budgeted for it because we didn't know that it was going to even be possible. The good news here is that it's my understanding the school district has asked for this for a while now. I've worked with Gino Hortolosa. After receiving what I thought was very exciting news from Councilman Ryan, Terry Ryan, to come forward with this money. So although the check is being presented ceremoniously tonight, our plan is to go back and re-present an amended capital improvement plan and a budget to be able to accept this funding. So we've done a lot of research with regard to how the retube monies will be processed, but tonight is a moment for us to celebrate money that none of us were expecting was going to be available to us. And I just want to thank Councilman Ryan for that.
Thank you. Harry, did you want to say a few words?
Thank you very much. Just that for clarification, personnel committee, I used to chair it. Sitting in your chairs. And the purpose of the personnel committee wasn't to review personnel, it was to evaluate the city manager. And because we never want to cross that line where council members are giving direction to staff and whatnot. So just for clarification, that's what that personnel committee was intended for. Anyway, thank you very much. Michael, it's very gracious of you. I've said this enough times, so I'll summarize it. When I was on the Mill Creek City Council, Snohomish County was pretty busy with their own stuff, and kind of looked at Mill Creek like as a little brother who did too well. And so we didn't get a lot of cooperation with the county. Planning around Mill Creek we did, but that was about it. So when I got up on the county council 6 years ago, I thought, you know, we need to write the scales here. So I've been working with Michael since budget time, and you know, I love parks and whatnot. And we were just trying to find the right project, and then Michael called me up and he said, I worked with Public Works Director Gina, and there was this project that was unfunded, and the dollar amount was perfect. And this is a big deal. Jackson High School and the Everett School District have been wanting this for some time. It will connect the two athletic fields together with a crosswalk, and it's a lighted crosswalk. That's why it's $100,000. These are partnership projects, and so we give some, it's not money, it's REIT dollars to each council member, an equal amount. I was chair of the budget. I made sure it was equal for everybody, and I chose to allocate a big portion of my allocation to Mill Creek for this. And I'm really excited because it's about safety. It's the school district wanted it, the school wanted it, and more than that, the parents need it for some security and peace of mind. So when they hit the button, as I understand this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, Regina, you press the button, the lights flash, as opposed to just walking out and possibly in oncoming traffic. So I'm really excited about this. I'm very happy to always partner with Mill Creek. And I should have started with this, but I want to say again, I want to thank all of you, sincerely thank all of you for serving Mill Creek. You guys have done a great job. It's not an easy job. It's certainly an underpaid job. I know that I appreciated the $500 a month that Mill Creek paid me for 17 years for about 100 hours a month to the city. $5 an hour even then was a lot below minimum wage. But so you're not in it for the money, you're in it for the heart. And that you care deeply about the community. I want to make sure that that community never forgets that. So thank you very much. And I want to commend Michael. I want to commend you and your staff. You're doing an absolutely fantastic job. I enjoy working with you. And Mill Creek's a great place. I've lived here for probably about 27 years now, maybe 28. I'm not going anywhere. We're still in the same house. Most of the kids have moved out. Our neighborhood's so great, we're not moving. And I'll always be in Mill Creek. There'll be a chain between me and Mill Creek. I'll always be connected here. So again, thank you. Ceremonial check. So, City of Mill Creek, $100,000. New crosswalk for Jackson High School, authorized by the Snohomish County Council. So bring it up. Give this to you, and I'd love to get a photo with council if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay,
so where do we
want to
go?
Too.
What's that?
We like photos too.
Okay, cool. Good.
Especially with
grateful
bringing us money, we really
like
photos.
Yeah.
Photos
with money
involved. Oh, yeah. Okay, take it. And then let me know.
Sometimes no
chair is tilted and it looks silly. So
make sure it's straight.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you very much.
That's straight. Okay.
Are we telling, is the sign straight?
The sign is straight. 1, 2, 3. Okay, one more time.
I blink a lot. You might want to take a couple.
1, 2, 3. Smile.
You're going to share with us the vision for health, and you should probably anticipate some questions.
to the coronavirus.
I hadn't heard about the coronavirus. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and appreciate your fitting us in here. We have just a few statistics that we wanted to share about how public health is working in the city of Mill Creek. We focus on making things simpler, safer, and healthier, both for the government as well as for the residents and businesses of your community. In 2019, we did a lot of implementation about online services, so making it easier for people to submit permits, to submit inspection requests or file complaints, and we've been starting to track that. So this is just one example of many that we're tracking of reducing the number of days to process a refund. So someone might pay for a business license and then decide later down the road they don't want to do that or some type of other permit. So thanks to our new system and implementing some field equipment, we're able to reduce the amount of time it takes to get refunds and other permits. We also created an online learning management system. So many childcare providers have to do training each year to keep their credits up. And we used to offer these classes in the health district or one of a few providers in the county where they can get those credits. And just in 2019, we implemented this online service so they can actually do them in their place of employment or at home online and get those credits. So we're actually one of the first counties in the state to do this. So we've actually been looking with Washington State Department of Health. Is this a platform that we could launch across the state? As you can see, the number of users has continued to grow, as well as the number of courses that we've been providing. These can be anywhere from communicable disease prevention in a child care setting, health and safety, taking care of safety equipment. So there are a number of child care providers here in Mill Creek. So this is definitely a benefit to businesses. We're also looking continuously at our customer feedback, both for those that are using our online services as well as people that come to the counter. These are just a couple snippets of efficient services and pleasant attitudes at the counter, and we track how that looks in person and online. Typically, we'll get more feedback for those people that are coming into the counter. They might fill something out while they're waiting, but if there's an online service, we do follow up with a survey as well. And here in Mill Creek, we've been pretty busy. My staff includes suicide prevention, opioid prevention, and tobacco and other types of substances. We have one of the few trainers that does QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer training, and we are proud to recognize Jackson High School students as our suicide prevention partner in 2019. These are some statistics from our Healthy Youth Survey data that shows feelings of depression or students who are seriously contemplating suicide is unfortunately increasing over the years. So, working with our partners and our schools to get more of that education and outreach into the community. This is typically one of the places that people think of public health is food inspections. And here in Mill Creek, there was 109 food inspections within your city. And that's just some of the 6,700 that our staff are out doing every day. There were 10 food illness complaints within the city and just one plan for a new food business. But we do keep quite busy, especially around temporary events, farmers market time of year. Needle cleanup, we partnered with police departments and other community events to have free needle pickup kits, so they come with everything that you need. We have a video that we worked on with the city of Everett, and to date, we started that in 2018. We've distributed over just under 1,300 free needle kits, and collected over 7,600 just at the health district. We've partnered with Snohomish County Solid Waste to make that easier, and currently working with the legislature to hopefully have a statewide sharp stewardship program so that it can become free for everybody. I'm excited that the city of Mill Creek, I wish we would have done a big check for the city too, but we nominated the city of Mill Creek for a Complete Streets grant, and Mill Creek was one of four recipients that got $300,000 last year. And we work with other cities around the county to do audits. We did audits around schools a couple of years ago, and so working on what are some of those traffic calming devices, transportation improvement plans, and other types of efforts that we can do with school districts in the cities. also working to keep Mill Creek healthier. Last year, we had a number of trainings focusing with dental providers on how when they're seeing patients, they can screen for HPV and other types of cancers. These are, again, some of the requirements that they need for their continuing education, but working on more learning management tools for that. And lastly, we have Healthy Starts. We do still have our Women, Infant, Children program that is transitioning out here in 2020 at the end of June. But in 2018 and 2019, we served just over 1,000 babies, making sure that they have a healthy start to life. And we've had a pretty fun program with Everett Public Schools doing a SNAP Ed, so it's a supplemental nutrition program, doing a summer program in conjunction with their free lunches where we go out and do a couple healthy eating, active living activities. So for 6 weeks, we partnered with Hawthorne Elementary and Sultan Elementary to do these summer activities. Lots of kids. Just a couple other programs. A lot of people wonder who public health is other than who you see here. We have a number of public health nurses, disease investigators, food inspectors, customer service, and healthy community specialists. Right now, we have just about 120 employees. At the end of June, we'll be shrinking down to 113 once those programs transition. We are focused on rebuilding the agency. That includes both the online and IT infrastructure, as well as increasing transparency and accountability. And what's not on here, which is what we have a lot of conversation about, is stable and sustainable funding. So there is another ask of the legislature, but we are also looking at creating a public health foundation for the county as another way to access 501c3 eligible grant funding. These are just some recaps of our environmental health division. They are quite busy doing inspections of food, restaurants, grocery stores, school kitchens, as well as pools and schools. We inspect all of the pools and hot tubs at apartment complexes and hotels, and then over 200 public and private schools in the county. And this should say Buffalo and Mill Creek area, but our prevention services division, in addition to coronavirus, we're quite busy with STDs, communicable disease screenings, refugee screenings, and also doing vaccine preventable checks with clinics. So we go into the clinics to make sure that they're keeping their vaccines at the correct temperature, that they're doing chain of custody, and that they're giving information out to the families in the right manner. So ideally, public health in Washington and Snohomish County has a good balance of prevention and response capabilities. Unfortunately, with the funding that's decreased over the years, a lot of our focus tends to be more on outbreaks. We do still have some prevention activities, largely in my team right now, Healthy Communities, where we focus on suicide prevention. We do child death review, where we look at what happened in the county and what are some policies or education outreaches that we could do to prevent similar deaths. And then a lot of substance use work. But that's all categorical funding. It's grants. It's very strict on how we can spend those dollars. And so because of that, what we start to see here in Snohomish County is a balance where we're focusing more on outbreaks and we're in response mode. Ends up costing more money in the end. There's some studies that show for every dollar in prevention, you save $12 down the road. But that's not the way we are right now. Some of those examples that you've seen locally, there was a hepatitis A case at a food establishment here in the area, and then the North Shore or the North Creek area had a measles case last summer. I'm sure you've all heard, we have the distinction of having the first coronavirus case here in Snohomish County. That was a very interesting call to get on Martin Luther King weekend. This is very similar to SARS and MERS. I'm sure many people are tracking it. It's a little bit different than measles, so we've had a lot of questions on why aren't we releasing the locations that this individual went to. And it's because with measles, you can walk into a room 4 hours later, and if you're not immunized, you'll likely get measles. With coronaviruses, they're droplets, so it's much more similar to the common cold or flu, where someone has to sneeze or cough, and then you come into contact with them. We put together a timeline of how quickly Snohomish County responded. This individual returned from China on January 15th, but did not have symptoms. And it wasn't until the next day that he started to have a fever and a small cough. Over the next couple days, it progressed, and so he did go see a clinic here in Snohomish County on the 19th. And again, we give a lot of credit to this patient and the provider. The patient had been paying attention to the news and pulled up on his cell phone, "I've been in Wuhan. Is this something I need to be concerned about?" And the provider also was paying attention to the health alerts going out through the CDC and started a chain of phone calls. So they did a bunch of testing on him. They knew it would take some time, and so in coordination with Washington State Department of Health and the CDC, it was agreed that he could go back home and remain isolated until test results came back. So we had one of our staff that went and checked on him in person the next morning, and the specimens were flown overnight to CDC Atlanta. The very next day, again, we checked on him on his temperature, but we were notified at 2:30 that he was positive for coronavirus. That's when my phone started going off, and I did not get off my phone until about midnight that night. They ramped up very quickly between DOH and CDC, and CDC was on the ground within 24 hours the next day. And then we had the press conference on the 21st. I can report that since January 19th, we have had over 30 staff members at the health district that have been activated in some capacity. We've spent over 950 hours, and that's amounted to $75,000 just in 2 weeks on this one case. So it's very time intensive. There's been a lot of moving parts, and we continue to keep the community updated. Right now, our focus is really on businesses and schools. After the information that came out on Friday that if you've traveled from China, you do need to remain at home for 14 days. So a lot of questions coming to us on what that means. Again, I mentioned earlier, our big ask for the legislature this session is additional funding. Last year, we went with a $100 million ask. The gap is actually $296 million for just communicable disease, environmental health, and some supporting capabilities. The legislature is definitely paying attention. We got some funding last year, but there are a number of bills right now looking at fixing the vape tax or other types of funding mechanisms. So how can you help public health and your constituents? Spreading the word about what public health does, we put a lot of information out. We'd love to have those included in newsletters or on social media. I know City of Mill Creek has shared a lot of our posts recently. If there's other partners in the community that we should be interacting with, make sure to connect them with us. We've been a big player in transportation and housing, but if there's other policy and planning work groups, and then helping to advocate for public health funding at the state level. We do have a blog that we post a couple times a month on. The most recent one was on coronavirus. But we do also have a number of newsletters that you can subscribe to, as well as our social media, and then we participate in a number of health fairs around the county. And that's what I have. Do you have any questions?
Questions? Councilmember Cavallari.
Thanks, Mayor. Thank you, Heather. Fabulous job as usual. I think you're one of the underappreciated civil servants in the room that just seems to do the job day in and day out, and nobody hears about all the successes. We've worked together a little bit on the vaping issue in our community, and I think we've made some good strides so far. I think the Bill 6254 going through the House now is an appropriate measure. I'm supporting it. I know you're going to support it. I'm hoping the community will support it. My question is I have a couple of them, but the first one I'll ask is, can you maybe explain a little bit to the community what the health district is doing as far as education and outreach to the kids?
Around vaping?
Correct.
So there is a pot of money that's allocated from Washington State. It includes a few different buckets. So there's some CDC dollars as well as some state dollars, and then with the new vape tax, there was an allocation that goes there as well. They split that up in regions. So for our region, we have the regional contract. We have $180,000 to educate over 1 million people in the 5-county area. But we stretch it as much as we can. Right now, the focus is about Tobacco 21, raising the age for tobacco and vaping to 21. making sure that there's cessation information out there, so if youth are interested in quitting, that there's resources in multiple streams. And then we've been doing a number of parent groups, school groups, youth groups, educating about the different devices that are out there, how fast the vape industry is adapting to the market, and anything from vape watches to vape hoodies to YouTube channels. So we do a lot of education about what's out there, and then we've been partnering with some schools to pilot alternatives to suspension. So we had heard from a number of schools that with the vape devices, students were getting suspended in school. And my staff member created a curriculum that instead of being suspended and sent home, they would first go through an education session. And so she talks about the risks of vaping, but also consequences, how to make other decisions, what are some other coping skills, other stress management skills, and that's a first step. So they get to go through that class and remain in school. And we've also created an online version and piloting that with a couple school districts in the county. Again, with the hope that we can push that out countywide.
Thank you.
Sure.
And Councilmember Vaughn.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather. Good to see you. You don't have to answer this. Just out of the comments on vaping, I'm curious. Vaping's been around for a while, and all of a sudden, in the last, like, 12 months, all of a sudden we started hospitalizations and deaths, and is there some information as to what you professionally have seen that might be causing it? Did something change in this one-year window as opposed to the last 10 years?
So I think a couple things. Public health was out in front a number of years ago saying we're not so sure how safe these devices are. They were marketed as a tobacco cessation product, but there haven't been tests to prove that. So we have had staff since 2016 focused on tobacco and vaping. With the most recent cases of lung injury, which I'm assuming you're talking about, it could be that they were around before and we just weren't testing for it. Many of the cases look kind of like pneumonia or flu where they have breathing problems. Some were black market, so it could be that people were tainting the products that they were using. But again, there haven't been the breadth and depth of studies like there have been with tobacco that took 40, 50 years to really understand the health concerns that we had around tobacco. So I think the health officer in King County said it best of saying that vaping devices are safer than cigarettes when you have a bar, and one of the leading causes of death is a pretty low bar, and we should aim higher.
Okay, Councilmember Vignelle.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you for all the work you've been doing. I've been seeing lots of updates on the coronavirus, sent home from school as well. My question for you tonight, you were talking about WIC phasing out. What are we doing, what's the health district working on to make sure that those kids and those mothers are getting what they need with WIC phasing out?
Absolutely. It was a tough decision. It took many years for the board to wrestle with this. But the health district, we weren't getting as much funding to operate the program, and so we were having to support about $1 million per year to provide the WIC program and First Steps program. When the board did make the decision with our 2020 budget to transition that to other partners, that included notification to Washington State Department of Health. They are the entity that determines who has the licensing or contract or caseloads for the clients. Our caseload is in the Everett and Linwood area. So they are doing what's similar to an RFP to find other providers that are interested in providing the WIC program. We've provided our support and we'll be continuing to do that through the next couple months while they make that selection. And our goal is that we will overlap services for a month or two so that we can transition our clients to the new provider. There's not a gap in coverage. We can have an appointment and then let them know they're going to be transitioning, help make those bridges and connections as well.
Thank you.
Yes.
John, do you have a question?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, right. Sure. Thank you, Heather. You mentioned briefly the funding issue. I'm glad you're going to Olympia and saying, hey, look, this is a statewide problem. This is not just Snohomish County. It's right, all health districts, and I've been a proponent of saying, let's figure out how to solve this at the highest level, because it's no different whether somebody lives in Mill Creek or Snohomish County or Thurston County or blah, blah, what again was the ask? You said something about there's a 200 something million gap, but you asked for 100 and only got 22. Is it a slide? I think I missed that.
It's been a multi-year effort. So really the full gap for funding governmental public health, so that's local public health like the Snohomish Health District, the State Department of Health, State Board of Health, and tribal public health, is $450 million per biennium. That's for everything. Realizing there's not that much available, we scaled and looked at what are the two most critical needs. Communicable disease and environmental health have the biggest risks to the community. And so that gap, along with some of the supporting capabilities like communications and data assessment, is $296 million. Last year, again, we had to make a focused ask, and so the ask was really $100 million starting there, and we got $22 million. It was in two parts. $12 million was built into the base budget moving forward for foundational public health services in a fund. And then an additional $10 million or so is from the vapor tax. Unfortunately, the vapor tax assumptions are off by about 85%. So there's a request to do a fix at the legislature this year. So whether that's a tax or additional funding, there's also a few bills looking at nonprofit insurers, creating a fund, looking at marijuana dollars. So they are really looking at different ways that they can fund public health.
That is the president of the Washington. Okay, anybody else? Michael, do you have anything? No, ma'am. Heather, thank you so much for visiting with us again. Thanks, Heather. Great job as always. Okay, so that finishes our presentations. Next up is old business, a resolution. All I can hear is Barbara saying, sit up next to the microphone. A resolution of the City of Mill Creek, Washington, declaring Mill Creek to be a veteran-friendly community and the City of Mill Creek to be a veteran-friendly employer. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor. As many of you on council know, there was a presentation last week. I had asked and appreciated that the council held off on the vote until Councilman Steckler and Councilman Todd were able to be present. I was originally introduced to Mr. Kidd by Councilman Steckler, and I thought it was especially appropriate that you be present this evening, which what I hope will be a vote, a resolution in support. So without further ado, I would ask our Mill Creek resident, Mr. Michael Kidd, to come to the podium, just speak briefly on what you discussed last week, and introduce the distinguished guests you have in attendance with you tonight.
Thank you, Mark. Mayor Pruitt and council members, thanks for having me back. You know, the brief I gave last week on the ESGR really is for Councilman Todd, since Councilman Steckler attended one of our events at Naval Station Everett 2 years ago, and we took him on a tour of the USS Kidd, which I happen to have an affinity for, so you'll see me wearing the Kidd ball cap around Elk Creek.
I did listen to the entire council meeting last week, so...
So
I have to go through everything again. Right, top level summary for the audience is great, but you do not have to do it again.
Okay. And again, following Councilmember Ryan and his big check, I'm not bringing anything other than the opportunity for the City of Mill Creek to garnish some goodwill with the veterans and the National Guard and the Naval Reserve, Army Reserve components that reside here in the state of Washington. You know, by proclaiming that Mill Creek is a veteran-friendly city and that you support men and women in uniform. So, again, does it cost anything to do the right thing? And I have four of the guests that I had with me last week. First is our commanding officer of the Naval Reserve Center, which is called the Naval Operational Support Center. Commander Motali Fimba is a 97 graduate of the Naval Academy out at his center at Naval Base Everett. He's got, I think, 14 reserve units and over 300 people that he helps take care of. You know, nationwide, our reserve headquarters out there takes care of, I think it's 11 states, it keeps changing, and over 10,000 reserve and guard members here in the Great Northwest. I also have John Patterson, who's the state chair for the ESGR. He's an appointed, it's a three-year appointed position by the Adjutant General for the National Guard from Washington State. And then John Natterstad is our North Area Chairman, to which I belong. I'm an ESGR, long-time ESGR volunteer. So,
they have a black.
I'd like to open it if anyone has any questions about what the state and the support and the proclamation in support of the men and women in uniform entails.
I don't have a question, but I was hoping you may have noticed the Purple Heart parking that we had out front there.
Yeah. 30 years in uniform, never earned one. My dad's a Navy veteran, he's earned three. And I told him, you know, when I entered the service that, you know, the medals he had, he can keep, you know, I'm going to go earn my own, but, you know, do it a little bit differently. So, but, you know, that those type of things, the veteran parking spots at Lowe's and, you know, some of the other establishments around here are recognized and greatly appreciated when we, you know, see that as a nod. You know, as I mentioned, I wear my USS Kid hat, and just the affirmation I get from people on the street, your state parade was a great event. I loved every minute of it. And, I was very proud to be a longtime resident of Mill Creek, and, Kevin Ryan said, I'm planning on being here for the duration because my kids graduated from school here. They're both established in the area, and they're not going anywhere, so we're here for the duration as well. So.
Thank you. Didn't we get a plaque last year? What?
Yeah, we are going to have this framed, but this is what we received. And
what was the plaque that we got?
That's for National Night Out.
That's for National Night Out, but this is okay. A statement of support. And with the council's permission, we would like to have a photograph taken with council leadership.
We have to vote. I noticed that the resolution numbers are wrong on this page. Do you know what the resolution, correct resolution number is? Sorry, it's not 2019. Can we just say 2020?
That's correct. Sorry.
Okay, so we need a motion to approve resolution 2020-585, Naomi. A resolution of the City of Mill Creek, Washington, declaring Mill Creek to be a veteran-friendly community and the City of Mill Creek to be a veteran-friendly employer. Do we have a motion?
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Put your hand.
Can I make one comment in regards to Michael mentioned that I went out and had an opportunity to meet with the reserve group. I'm so happy that we are at a time in our history, in our country, where we are now recognizing the men and women who have joined our forces and have made that ultimate contribution. I grew up in a time when we didn't really have as much recognition for the men and women of the military, and I'm glad to see that that has changed. I have gotten to know Michael, I've gotten to know John, in personal times. These are people that I have so much respect for. I never served in the military, so you have my ultimate thanks and my ultimate recognition. Michael opened my eyes to, yes, we need to recognize our veterans, but we also need to recognize our reservists. Those people that are in the reserves, it is hard as an employer to bring a reservist in and to employ them, to recognize their times that when they leave and serve. And I salute the reservists, and I'm glad to see that we are supporting them from an employment standpoint as well as just our pure, honest to God thanks for your contribution. So I just want to say that for the veterans and the reservists, the city is behind them. Sorry, I just want to say that.
It's okay. It's great.
Oh, guys, you've
got to
come on.
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah, you don't get to sit.
You could come right up here. Yep.
Why don't you guys?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. Yes.
We're one of the few areas.
You want up there?
Yes, please.
Okay. Actually, you know what?
put you guys in the front, because you get
the front here.
Yeah, we should be your background.
Yes, we are definitely background players.
This is your picture, we're just eye candy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, good to see you again. Hi. Okay, so in the middle.
Yeah, so if you just leave that.
You guys want to vote the resolution?
Yep, oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, are we close enough, Naomi?
Yes. Yes, I have everybody's beautiful face. Hold on one second. Perfect, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much.
Thanks, guys. Mike.
We're due, overdue.
Is that all the, Michael, is this all the sign?
My voice, too.
Yes, we are, I will sign.
Okay, good deal.
Thanks, Steve.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, this is. Thank you, thank you so much.
Okay, next up is Mill Creek Boulevard Vision Update, City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an update, as the council will note from the agenda summary. We have a number of points that we want to make certain we're on the same page with the council before we proceed to any assumptions relating to adopting as is or modification. There's been a tremendous amount of work done. And Gina, I'd like you to summarize for us where we're at.
Michael, this is vision adoption. We're not adopting anything.
Mayor, that was an old version. The agenda is for a vision update. There is no adoption anticipated for this evening's. It's vision adoption. There's no proposed motion. And what we're recommending for council is to discuss this vision and provide us with guidance regarding the elements of the vision statement.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael. And good evening, council. Yeah, so tonight's purpose is to provide council with an update as to where we are on the Mill Creek Boulevard sub-area study, and specifically on what we accomplished at the last PAC meeting, PAC 4, which occurred in mid-December, and then also to have a discussions and receive guidance from council in preparation for the next PAC meeting, PAC 5, which will be next week. So Tom Rogers from city staff, of course, project manager on behalf of the city, and Mandy Roberts, project manager consultant, will get into the details of the next steps and provide also an update on PAC 4. However, I wanted to set the stage a little bit as to why it's relevant to have this discussion tonight. First of all, PAC 5 will be focusing on visioning for the corridor, and the purpose of that is to really set the foundation for next steps. So the purpose of tonight's discussion is to have for us as a team to have some direction as to what True North is. How we will get there has yet to be determined, but we want to have some discussion to at least have a pulse on that, if not full-on direction, at least a pulse. Also, with the vision, we will incorporate the community aspirations, and the purpose of the vision is to be future-focused. So that's just in general what a visioning exercise is. Now, the next steps, as far as like tangible next steps, is we're going to be developing alternatives. So we'll talk about a charrette and what that will entail. And as an output of that exercise, there will be three alternatives. One alternative will be the baseline alternative, or what could be called the do-nothing alternative. It's really not a do-nothing from a capital project perspective. There are things that need to happen on Mill Creek Boulevard. We have at least 10 C failures that need to occur.
We know we have to do some overlaying. We know we have sidewalk missing, so there is certainly a capital need. The do-nothing alternative refers to land use and zoning changes, and that's the baseline alternative. In other words, perhaps not changing the comprehensive plan or the zoning, but there's certainly capital projects that are needed. The do-nothing alternative will provide a vision as to what can be done. Should we include parking, not parking? Should we add sidewalk where sidewalk is missing? So that would be the do-nothing alternative. The other two alternatives will look beyond the capital project needs and will look at land use. And there will be different degrees as to what will be incorporated in those two alternatives. And that's really where perhaps more of the white canvas creative space is at. So that said, again, three alternatives. One that's baseline with capital improvements and no land use comprehensive plan code changes, and the other two would entail comprehensive plan code changes. So I'll leave it at that. I just wanted to set the stage, and then Tom Rogers from city staff and Mandy Roberts will take it on from here.
Thank you, Gina. It's great to be in front of the council again. My main thing here to do is to sort of introduce Mandy and sort of let you know that we're sort of fulfilling our promise as staff. As you know, we have a pact that's sort of working together. There's three members of the council that are on this planning advisory committee. And what we promised you is that as we go through the process, this group will take a really deep dive into these issues. But every time we're going to come back to the council and just make sure that you're on board and you know what's going on. And then give you an opportunity to sort of provide some input. And then we'll go back to the pack. The next meeting is going to be on the 12th, which is a week from tomorrow night. And we're going to do some charrettes, and Mandy's going to talk to you a little bit about that. And following that, we'll be back again to let you see what we come up with before we start doing the lion's share of all the analysis, because we're going to do sort of an analysis to compare them, so you can compare that do nothing versus the other two as well, the return of investment, the pros and the cons. But we want to make sure that you're part of that move all the way. Even though we've got three of you on that committee, it's important that you're all aware of what's going on. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Mandy. And I'll be sitting right over there, but I'll be ready to answer any questions.
Good evening, council members. Nice to see you again. So I wanted to maybe just back up a little bit and remind you that we are about halfway through this year-long process that we've started for the Mill Creek Boulevard subarea plan. And we started last summer really looking at existing conditions, analyzing what's out there today. And then as we moved into the fall, we had quite a few stakeholder and community meetings with different groups around the community, including a great session where we had the youth advisory board, and they filled up the room and had more comments than any of our other groups, so it was very energizing. We met with seniors, we met with business representatives, a lot of different diverse groups in the community to get input over the course of a couple of months, really, in meetings that spread out over time. And really, the idea was to get input in a very broad way as to what people could envision or would like to see happen in the subarea. So we took a lot of notes. We documented all of that. And we have a report that describes what we heard. And then we went back to the Project Advisory Committee in November and December and started to review with them what we had been hearing, and then worked with them to coalesce around some strong phrases that represent what the vision for this area could be. And that was all really towards a mission of developing a vision statement, and you see that in your packet this evening. Vision statement is really a great foundation for a plan. It's where a lot of plans start. It becomes an aspirational perspective of what you would like to see. Not necessarily what is there today, although it can encompass that, but what could happen in 10, 20, even 30 years in this sub-area. And so we went through an exercise in December that Gina talked about and Tom talked about in our PAC meeting number 4, where we had taken direct phrases and comments that we heard from the public and organized those into different categories. I'll just mention those categories. And we had all of these organized in boards. So the categories that were kind of the common themes that we heard a lot from the public and from stakeholders were addressing existing problems. And by the way, for each one of these, we had, I think, 8 to 10 different statements that described what, you know, what those specific themes were that were part of the problem. So traffic, you know, traffic congestion was one of the problems that was mentioned quite frequently in the meetings. That was one of the statements that we had on the boards. Support for making land use and or infrastructure changes was another common theme. Creating a more bicycle and pedestrian-friendly place, and a lot of interest also in the role of North Creek Trail in that theme. Connectivity to transit, and of course that relates to bus rapid transit, the Green Line, as well as the Orange Line, future Orange Line, how to connect to those systems. The fifth theme was public parks and open space, and that encompassed a lot of different ideas, but basically there's a lot of public land within the sub-area today that the city owns around the pond area, along the North Creek Trail and the City Hall campus. That was part of it. Also just creating a sense of green. There was a lot of mention from the community about how important trees are, for example. So that's really encompassed within that common theme as well. Enhancing the civic city core. And that was really an idea that we heard a lot about could we make this, where we're standing today, this heart of our community, a more identifiable, prominent place where people, you know, go, not only to come to your meetings, but come outside and go to festivals. Can we enhance that sense more? So we do have festivals here now. What can we do to improve and even expand upon that within this sub-area in the future? The next one was vibrant business, economic vitality. That was a very important comment that we heard a lot about in the public meetings. This is a hub for commerce, the sub-area is, as well as town center. What can we do to continue to energize and strengthen that? Placemaking, creating places that attract people and customers, accommodating growth, and housing choices. So basically, we had common phrases that we heard organized under each of those themes, and then our project advisory committee members went around and put dots on those. We gave them green dots and blue dots. And we reserved the green dots for the very most important statements that they felt really represented the essence of what the sub-area could be, and then blue dots for other really important phrases. So at this moment, I'm going to stop for a minute and ask if any of the council members who participated in that process would like to make any comments about that, how that went. You know, it became very clear as we were looking at the dots on the boards, kind of what themes and ideas really resonated and had the most support within the project advisory committee. So I'll stop. If any of you guys would like to add in about the process and participate.
I hit the wrong button. I turned on this button, not my mic. Now barking. I thought it was a really interesting and good discussion. I think most of the meetings have been in response to one of the comments we heard earlier about traffic. I will say that was one area where I think there's unanimity that we don't want to see a major realignment of that road because we recognize it is important to moving traffic through there. So that was one area where I think there was agreement. I might be putting the cart before the horse a little bit here, but I think the only area where I found interesting is when I look at the vision statement from in the last parenthetical. It talks about a great place to live and work and shop. And I say that's interesting because if you saw where everyone put the dots, this is a global statement, but there wasn't much emphasis on the living part. And that's where I would say there's the most disagreement is how much housing potentially accommodate. Not saying it's going to happen, but to consider it happening there. And the reason I raise this, I'm going to bang this drum yet again, and bear with me a minute, but I think this is important context for all to keep in mind. Under the GMA, the way this works is every 8 years, the state, Office of Financial Management, comes up with their population allocations, and they say, Snohomish County, here's the number you need to plan for. Then through the Snohomish County Tomorrow process, that gets allocated between the unincorporated areas, the rural areas, all the cities, all the MUGAs, and the urban growth areas. And we have an obligation under state law, 3678.115, that we have to adopt a comp plan and development regulations that provide the capacity to accommodate the growth that's been allocated to us. So let's put some numbers to that. The last comp plan we adopted was based, and Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, was based on the OFM population projections that came out around 2014-15, which were a 2035 population projection. Population projection for Mill Creek for 2035 was 20,196 people. Our comp plan that we adopted accommodates 20,396 people. So far, so good. OFM's 2019 population estimate for Mill Creek, 20,590. It's 400 people more than what was projected to be in the city of Mill Creek in 2035. Now, we've added some capacity. We've added the farm. So figure that as approximately 750 people to our population capacity with our zoning. So that puts us at about 21,000 people. 2022, we'll get new numbers from OFM that we're going to have to base, or not we. Whoever is lucky enough to be sitting up here in 2022 and 2023, considering our next comp plan, is going to have to come up with a plan that accommodates the population allocation that we're given. We're already at ahead of where our 2035 population projection was. I'm willing to bet a fair amount of money that we're going to be put in a situation where our capacity is not enough to accommodate the growth that's going to be allocated to us, which means the body that's up here has got to make decisions. We've got to look at the land use map and look at it and say, we don't have capacity in the city. We have, by law, the obligation to make changes to our comp plan to accommodate the growth that's been allocated to us. So we have to look at residential areas. We have to look at where we can put that. So I just want to put that in context when we... I understand the comments about the aversion to multifamily development. At the same time, we have an obligation to plan for it. And the implications are real. If we don't adopt a comprehensive plan that meets our population allocation, accommodates it, and we get challenged to the growth board, and the growth board agrees that we've adopted a non-compliant comp plan, here's what the governor can do. He can withhold our share of MPED. He can withhold our share of transportation improvement funding for projects that have been done from the state. He can withhold our sales and use tax allocation. The governor can withhold our liquor profits taxes. He can withhold our liquor excise tax. And what I wasn't aware of is kind of the nuclear option that the governor has. He can withhold our ability to collect REIT. That's a pretty sizable amount of our budget that's not insignificant to those into our capital projects. So I just want to put that out there for the discussion when we talk about whether or not this is an area we consider. I'm not saying we do it, but I think this is an area we seriously at least have to look at how we may be able to accommodate some growth, because if we're going to say we don't want it here, we don't want more 3 or 5-story apartment buildings or condos, whatever it may be, that's fine. I just want to understand if we're not going to put it in this location, odds are we're going to have to put it somewhere else in the city. Not a lot of vacant land in the city, which leaves you choices to look at the existing zoning and decide where you're going to increase the density in those existing areas. So I want to just share that context because that was the most, out of the discussion we had in the Planning Advisory Committee, that was the one area where I guess I would say there's some disagreement, because you know, some people reflected what many of us hear from the community. We don't want any more apartments. So, but that overall, I think, is a good process, and that's where I was jumping ahead. I think the vision statement pretty much encapsulates that, but I would advocate that we have some language that's a little more flexible in terms of considering residential in this area, and maybe the language is tied to considering residential that can meet the city's obligations to comply with the growth management act or something to that effect, fairly generic. But I don't want to limit our ability to look at it. Again, I'm not arguing that this is open to what we may decide to do, but I think we have the obligation to look at how we may be able to accommodate some more residential in that area. Thanks.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Thanks, Mayor. Thank you. Thanks for your comments. I think perhaps maybe I don't know enough about the mandates for the GMA, but my belief system and what I have learned so far is that it's my understanding that they take your existing lands, your existing populations, the areas you have zoned for business, the area you have zoned for residential, and they conform all that land into to these threshold numbers that you're supposed to meet regarding how much growth you're supposed to accept over the next 10, 20, 30 years. And if we're essentially, and I'm not closing the door on growth, I'm just saying if we're essentially already there through 35, I don't see the need to ring an alarm that the governor's going to start withholding REIT. I think that's kind of alarmist, but I respect your opinion. Some residential, I think, would be acceptable. I think the problem that we've run into in many years is that some residential is a slang term for massive amounts of apartments, and I think that's the fear why you see so much hesitation, and I haven't seen the dots. I think that's why you see so much hesitation and disparity on what people want to do there, because, you know, personally, another 2,000, 3,000 units of apartments in that area, it's the city really could not sustain it. It would just mean higher taxes for everybody else. So while I completely understand some folks' vision on what that area should look like, you know, making it conform to town center, I think, would be appropriate to some degree in the sense that it has the townhomes that go along with it. But the big fear is apartments, and then once that is zoned a certain way, the fear is, mine included, that someone will just kick that door down. So those are just some thoughts, and I have some others, and I'll expand on them in a bit, but those are just my thoughts on existing comments. Thanks.
Councilmember Virginia.
Speaking of the microphone for Barb. going back, to the conversation that night, I was kind of surprised with some of the areas that had dots, more dots than others. My memory is a little bit faded, though, on which ones had so many dots. We did, this goes to what Will brought up as well, we had a very robust conversation on traffic and kind of got off topic and discussing traffic in areas that traffic is bothering people. So I think that was a really good conversation. Something I'm going to go over to that I don't see in our bullets that I keep bringing up is really important. I want to make sure that we are not losing our commercial component, because our commercial businesses in that area are extremely important. You know, I come down here every day, spend lots of time, you know, the grocery store is here, the dentist is here, the Cora's hair dresser is here, you know, so we need to make sure that we're not losing our businesses when we're making this strategy. So I just want to make sure, since it wasn't one of our highlighted bullets, that we don't lose track of that when we go to our charrettes and everyone starts envisioning what this could look like. And also, I'm going to go with a little bit of what Vince said. When you were discussing about having this look a little housing along the lines of the town center, I could see seeing what would that look like. I am someone who has a hard time visualizing things, so I think in line with the town center, it blends in, and most of us don't realize we have housing in the town center, I think. So that would be an interesting scenario to look at, I think.